All right. It's going up, Parshas Yisro. I'm really sorry that this year I am not doing the 40 miracles. We're not doing the 40 miracles this year. I'm very, very, I'm really, really upset about that. We did it last year. We did it 2 years ago. But we're not going to do it this year. Let's get into the beginning of the Parshas. It says, Vayishma Yisro choin midyan chosin Moshe is kol asher asah lakim lemoshe l'Yisro amo. Hiyote Hashem Yisro mi Yisrayim. Yisro, the coin of Midian, the priest of Midian, went ahead and heard, he was the father-in-law of Moshe, everything that God did to Moshe and to the Jews. Kiyotzi Hashem Yisrael Mitzrayim, that Hashem brought the Jews out of Mitzrayim. So Rashi says two things. He heard about two things. Two things he heard were, number one, the splitting of the Yamsuf. The Yamsuf, the Red Sea, got split. That's number one. And the second thing is Mohammed Amalek, that they fought against Amalek. They went up against Amalek. So the question is, what's the, what do we want with those two things? Why those two things? And what's the connection between those two things? Like, what's the big deal? Okay, I understand the Yamsuf happened. I understand. And I know that Amalek happened. They fought Amalek. But what were those two things? Why does it have to be both? Why not just one of them? If you saw a river split or a huge sea split and go 300 miles into the air, that's not enough to make you say, you know what, I want to be Jewish. That's not enough. You need like, oh, and they fought a war and they won. Oh, I'm in. I'm in. That's going to make you Jewish? What happened? That's number one. Number two, we connect it with last week's Parsha. Amalek is right at the end of last week's Parsha. This is what you got to do. You got to destroy Amalek for whatever reason, but it does say it over there. Why? What happened with Amalek that we have to destroy them? And what does that lead us into this Parsha? What did Amalek do that was so wrong? Number three, later on, Rashi says a line. He says, Yisro is praised. The Shvacho shel Yisro divar akasuv. The praise of Yisro, the Pasuk says, then Pasuk Hey, Shay Yoshef Bichvodo Sholom. Yisro was on top of the world, sitting in honorable, one of the most honorable people in the world. The Nadvu Libo, let's say this is a midborn, Makom Tohu Lishmo Divrei Torah. He was generous enough to give of himself to go learn Torah. He went out to the desert to go learn Torah with Moshe Rabbeinu. He's sitting on top of the world, all the way up high, with everything going on. You know, he's the guy in charge of everything, and he's like, forget it, guys. I'm out. I want to go learn Torah. I want to go learn. What happened to him? What happened to him that he decided that he wanted to do that? And I don't understand. Yisro was that honorable? Do you guys remember what happened in the beginning of Parshas Shmos? What was happening to his daughters at the well? His daughters were at the well. They tried to get up there. And they were being chased away. Why? Because everybody used to make fun of Yisro. Because Yisro was a nobody. This guy used to be the advisor in Egypt. And all of a sudden he's a nobody. So they made fun of him. All of a sudden he became covetic again? What happened? What's going on here? So three questions again. Number one, why does it have to be Yamsuf and Amalek? Number two, what's the connection with last week's parsha about Amalek? And what do they do that's so bad? And number three, is Yisro an honorable guy or a nobody? What kind of a person is he? What's going on over here? Why does it seem to be that there's a difference between those two? Okay, so here we go. There's a medrash. It's going to be an awesome, awesome shot. You got to like really like pay attention to this medrash. It goes like this. Pasuk says, you have to write it down. As long as you know it. As long as you know it. When you say it over, you have to say, the Pasuk says, Leit take upasi yarin. It says in the medrash in this week's parsha, Vayish Mayisro, Leit take, the foolish person, will be hit. Upesi, and the dumb person, will be tricky. Yaron, he'll be tricky. What does that mean? Leitz Takeh refers to Amalek. Pesi Takim refers to Yisro. So what is that? What does that mean?
What do we refer to what?
Leitz Takeh, the Leitz, whatever this Leitz is, the foolish guy, that's Amalek. Now Pesi, the idiot, is Yisro. The idiot is Yisro. I don't understand. Well, what in the world does that mean? So what does it go? So it goes like this. Unbelievable. Amalek went up to Bnei Yisrael after they just crossed the Yamsuf. 3 days later, they had this huge thing. The water is all the way up in the air, right? They're going through. We had the 50 miracles last week. All the crazy stuff that happened with Bnei Yisrael in the middle of the Yamsuf, where there was dry floor, there was dry ground in there. They were able to take spring water outside of the salt water. All these crazy things. Trees sprouted up in the middle of nowhere. The Egyptians came in and it crashed down on top of them. All the other nations that were inside that sea chasing after the Jews came out and went back to their own special places and everything. They all went back to their place. And all of a sudden, these Amalek guys are like, time to fight. Let's go get the Jews. What are you doing? When they're on top of the world like that, the stupidest thing you could do is go fight them. Wait a week. Wait 2 weeks. Wait a month. Wait until people forget about it. But don't do it 3 days after Kriyas Yamsuf. It's the dumbest thing in the world. So what was Amalek thinking? Because Amalek is a definition of a late. You know what a late is? A late is, and I hate to say it this way, and I know this is going online and everything, late is Jerry Seinfeld. Jerry Seinfeld. What is Jerry Seinfeld? A guy who looks at the world, not in a bad way, well, in a bad way also, looks at the world and makes it absurd. Makes it absurd. There is absolutely no truth to his statements, although sometimes there is, you know, with the whole, well, there are some reservations. I mean, that happens to be a true thing. But regarding everything else, there's nothing true to his statements. They're just absurd. Absolutely absurd. He just takes the world and looks at it and skewers it in such a way that it looks like it's absolutely ridiculous. He turns it around. That's the power of a fool. By a fool, I mean, you know, is like the, how do they call it? The king's fool? King's fool. The jester. The king's jester is the guy that goes out there and he takes what's true in the world and twists it around to such a point. Not with real statements. Not with reality. Not with anything like that. He makes you think that what he's saying is true when he has absolutely no truth to his statements whatsoever. No truth to his statements whatsoever. In fact, he's saying something which is absolutely dumb. Amalek's power was to make fun of Bnei Yisrael, make fun of them, so that people would look at Bnei Yisrael and be like, oh, those guys are nothing. Those guys are nothing. He immediately heard about it. It's like, if not for the fact that we had so many comedians in this world, people would actually think George Bush was a really good guy. Think he was a smart guy. They think he's a normal person. It's only because we have all these comedians that are out there that are catching his every word and everything that he says and twists it around. Anybody remember what happened with Dan Quayle? Anyone remember Dan Quayle? The famous George, the original George Bush is his vice president? When he misspelled potato, I think it was. Misspelled, come on! What's the big deal? You added an extra E, but all of a sudden, Dan Quayle's the dumbest person of all time. The guy went to Harvard. The guy probably had an IQ of 180. The guy became the vice president of the United States of America. No, he's an idiot. He doesn't know how to spell potato? Come on. What's wrong with him? All of a sudden, elites can turn things around, said it's no longer true. Things that are 100% true are no longer true. Or people look at it and they're like, oh, yeah, you're right. You're 100% right. That's the power of elites. The more absurd it is, the funnier it is. The great job he did. And you know what the proof for that sort of a thing is? When somebody's sick in the stomach, he's got like something wrong, right? Chas v'shalom, he has cancer. He has something like terribly wrong. What do? You cry when you hear such stories. You get upset. You say to Tehillim, you got to do this, you got to do that. It's like so sad. I can't believe that happened to that guy. When a guy has something wrong in the head, when the guy's stupid and says stupid things, or he just says foolish things, you laugh at him. You laugh at him. The power of a fool, the power of a late, is a tremendous power. The brain is so much different from any other part of the body. If a guy does something with his brain, if his brain is off, the guy's, you laugh at the guy. But if anything else is off, you say, oh man, I feel so sorry for that guy. If the brain is off, you should cry for that guy just as much. What's wrong with you? But there's a difference, because there's that little bit of a difference. One late, one foolish line can destroy hundreds of other people that are telling the absolute truth. So what did Amalek try to do? They heard that Bnei Yisrael was all the way up there, started making fun of them. They didn't say one true statement. They didn't think at all. They went straight at Bnei Yisrael. Went straight for them and said, oh, they're just normal people just like you and me. They're regular normal people just like you and me. Come on, we can go fight them. And they lost big time. Lost huge. They were destroyed. They were sent down. There was nothing left in all the Jews. All the Jews destroyed Amalek. All of Amalek was completely gone. And yet they looked at it and they said to themselves, wait a second. The other guy around said, like, you know, Amalek is right. Why are the Jews any different? Well, what about Kriyas Yamsuf? I don't remember that. You know what happened yesterday? They made fun of them. I just saw a joke on YouTube, and all of a sudden, that's the best joke I've ever heard. See, these guys aren't real anymore. That's all it is. Because of that, the power of Elates is so powerful. The powerful power of Amalek was so powerful, we have to get rid of them. Yisro, he was a very powerful guy. What happened to him? He was knocked down, but he brought Moshe into his house. When he brought Moshe Rabbeinu into his house, we know that when a tzaddik comes along, he brings along bracha. What happened to Lavan when Yaakov came into the house? Lavan had a lot of bracha. What happened to Potiphar when Yosef came along to his house? Potiphar had a lot of bracha. All these things, tzaddikim come into your house, brings bracha. So what happened over here when Moshe came to Yisro's house? Yisro all of a sudden became a very powerful person. He became extremely rich, extremely powerful, and everybody wanted to listen to Yisro again. He's sitting on top of the world, in the covered of the world, and he's listening to other people make fun of Bnei Yisrael, and he's sitting there and he thought to himself, after Kriyas Yamsuf, he thought, I want to join Bnei Yisrael, but they're never going to accept any gerim. They're on top of the world. When he saw what happened with Amalek, that Amalek knocked them down, brought them down to such a level that people were like, oh, I could be like Bnei Yisrael. Anybody's like Bnei Yisrael. Then he said, now I want to join the Jews. Everybody looked at him and said, you idiot. Why would you want to join the Jews? Why would you want to join them? They're nobody. They're just like you and me. He says, Yisro, you don't get it. Amalek doesn't have any power. Amalek didn't do anything. Amalek just made fun of them. The Jews are powerful. The Jews still have that power, and they defeated Amalek. But the power of elites is so powerful that they didn't realize that. So in that point, it's elites taka. Elites, a fool, will be destroyed. Only a pesi, only the one who's considered stupid in the eyes of all others can be yarin, can bring himself up because of that and bring himself up. That's the idea behind it. There's another pshat that's brought down. How many kriyas yamsuks were there? How many times did the sea split?
Two.
That's not bad. Where's the second one? Very good. I'm extremely impressed, are you? That's really not bad. Does anybody know that? There was one regular kriyas yamsuk. There was one time when the sea was split. It happened again. Dustin and Aviram, the famous Dustin and Aviram, who's always fighting with Moshe. They told on Moshe before. The losers who die in Parshas Korach. The losers who die later on. They stayed in Mitzrayim. They stayed all the way in Mitzrayim. As Kriyas Yamsuf ended, Dustin and Aviram were like, wait a second, we want to be with the Jews. So God made the sea split again. A whole second split just for Dustin and Aviram. It's brought down. It doesn't say the Be'er Mayim Chaim. The Be'er Mayim Chaim says, because we don't want to show people that they should delay and they'll be able to make rash decisions at the very, very end.
But did like the entire world hear about it like they did the first
one? Not the same thing. But it was a big miracle.
Split as well?
Probably. Meaning probably the same types of ideas happened, just not to the extreme. We have the exact same thing for Dustin and Aviram as you did for all of Bnei Yisrael. What in the world is up with that? Yisro heard about that and he said, I don't get it. What just happened over here? Then he saw Amalek. Who did Amalek fight? Who did Amalek go up against? When they waged war against Bnei Yisrael, they couldn't fight them. They were the Anani Akavu, the clouds all around them. So who did they fight? Who did Amalek fight?
Weak people.
Who were the weak people? The people all the way in the back who were kicked out of the clouds. Shave it done. The people were doing something wrong. What was wrong with them? These guys didn't want to walk so fast. Shave it done was like, yeah, we'll catch up with you guys. They stayed all the way in the back. So Amalek came up and started destroying them. Started to hit them down. Yisro said, wait a second. When Dustin and Aviram stayed back there, what happened? They were able to get a full new Kriyas Yamsuf. But now that these people from Shevet Dan are behind the cloud, they got killed by Amalek. So I don't understand. What happened over here? What's the connection between the two? He said, I got it. You know what happens? There's a difference. Yisro's sitting there, and it's already after Matan Torah. They already got the Torah. They went to Har Sinai, they got everything. I know it's out of order, but according to Rashi, they already got the Torah. And Yisro's like, it's too late. I can't join the Jews. It's too late. What am I going to do? Then he saw, that depends. If you're Dustin Aviram, if you're late, but you really try to get back to Bnei Yisrael, you really want to do it, and you do it l'shem shamayim, for the sake of God, and even though it's late, if you try to go up there, you could be a tremendous person. In fact, you could even have a second Kriyas Yamsuf. You could have a huge miracle happen just for you. Rabbi Akiva decided at the age of 40. He didn't say it's too late for me. He decided it's time. I may be 40 years old, but I'm going for it. And he went full throttle all the way forward. He put it all the way to it. He went straight into it, and he was able to make it. Never say it's too late for me. Never say I can't do it anymore. But the other people in Shevet Dan were like, we'll catch up with you. They were lazy. Lazy people got us to kick out. Then God says, I don't want you guys here. If you're going to be delayed because you're lazy, get out of here. I don't want you among us. Then Amalek is going to go and fight you. So said Yisro, I'm right here right now. I think it's too late for me to go get Matan Torah. But he said to himself, but if I really try, maybe I'll get something. Maybe there will be a second Matan Torah just for me. I'll be able to get my own Torah. And he ran as fast as he could up to Moshe and the rest of the people in Bnei Yisrael. He ran up to the clouds and said, let me in. I really want to join you guys. And Moshe let him in. And guess what? He got his second Matan Torah. His name was put in the Torah. He got his own Parsha in the Torah. He gave an advice to Moshe Rabbeinu, which was added onto the Torah. He got his own Torah that applied to him himself. Just like Dustin and Aviram got their own Kriyas Yamsuf, he got his own Matan Torah. How it happened exactly, was it exactly the mountain, was it exactly with HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming down? We don't know that. But Yisro was able to deserve his own Matan Torah, and the same thing applies by us. Never think to yourself, it's too late. Because as soon as you say to yourself, it's too late, you're gone. Then you're shaved done, and a Amalek will get you. But if you go full throttle, you say, you know what? I screwed up. I'm going straight forward. I'm going to keep trying, and I'm going to move myself forward. Then all of a sudden, things start working. Then all of a sudden, HaKadosh Baruch Hu helps out a little bit, puts you in the back. And then he does a crazy miracle for you, which you never expected in the first place. Who knows what that kind of miracle will be? But that's the idea behind it. That's the idea of what Yisro is going to do. Now, there's something that Yisro did. I don't know if anybody really catches this in the Pasuk, but in Pasuk Tess, it says, Vayichad Yisro, Al Kolatova. Vayichad Yisro means one of two different things. But one of the Pirushim of Rashi says, Chidudin, he had goosebumps all over his body. When he heard what happened to the Egyptians, he got goosebumps all over his body. Why? Because Yisro grew up in Mitzrayim. He grew up in Egypt. And he was a part of that nation. And he felt upset. He said, I can't believe that happened to Mitzrayim. Yes, he was happy for all the good things that God did for the Jews. He was very happy about it. But he was like, oh man, the Egyptians have to die? What's wrong with the Egyptians? What did they do wrong? All of a sudden he got very, very upset. He sat there and he said, I can't believe that just happened to the Egyptians. He got very, very upset. From that Rashi says, it's usur to go up to a ger. To go up to a ger for 10 generations. It's usur to go to somebody who was originally from another nation and make fun of their nation. And make fun of their nation. You should know, by the way, there are Sfarim that say that the people who consider themselves liberals, people who consider themselves liberals, in other words, say that we want the good for this, we want the good for that, whatever it is from this concept. That originally they came from a family that was black. Originally they say that they came from a family that was something else, that was Hispanic or something like that. And because of that, they have within them the want and desire to be able to bring in, to say, like, we want to help out these people specifically. And because of that, it's usur gummer to be able to make fun of those people in front of those guys, even 10 generations later. Because they'll still have those desires and those needs and those wants, even 10 generations later. And it's a very important thing to have in Klal Yisrael. Because without it, I think we all know, there are a lot of people in Klal Yisrael, there are a lot of people among us that are extremely, unfortunately, racist. And to have those people among us that are able to push us to the side, they're able to push us to be able to like everybody else, is a good thing to have. But that's why we have them. Because for 10 generations, it still stays within you that I remember I was that type of a person. Even if it's just from one side of the family, my mother's, father's, mother's, mother's, father's, mother, etc. But it still stays with you. So Yisrael was 10 generations removed, 10 generations away removed. Anybody know who Yisrael was, who his father was? Who his father was? Yisro was from Midian. He was literally the son of Midian. Anybody know who Midian was the son of? Anybody? It's a good one. Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu had 6 kids with Keturah at the end of his life. One of them was Midian. Yisro was a grandson of Avram Avinu. He's a grandson of Avram Avinu. He was old. Yes, 100%. But he's still a grandson of Avram Avinu. If you go generations back, that brings it back. From his mother's side, he was from the Egyptians. His mother's side, he was all the way to the Egyptians. From his father's side, he was from Avram Avinu. Plus, he had a connection to Bnei Yisrael in the first place. There was a connection. You know what his name stands for? Yud Taru. Because he was a Yud, he became a Yehudi, he became a Jew. That's what he means by Yud, as in Yehudi. And Taru, he added on, how many mitzvahs does a Goy have? 7 mitzvahs. Add on how many to make 613? How much do you have that on? 606. That's not bad. That's some good math. 606 is Rus, which is Taf Resh Vav of Yisro. It's Yud plus Taru. Meaning when he became a Yehudi, he added on 606 mitzvahs to himself, and they named him Yisro. That was his entire name. His name came from that type of a thing. Now, you should know, though, that when a person comes in like that, and he does come in from other nations, the Satan is still with him. The Satan is still there. He may be very, very... He's not as powerful as he should be, but he's still there. You know what Yisro did to Klal Yisrael? You think he did a great thing. He said, hey, do you want to know how to make judges? I'll show you what to do. Make these judges, make that, make this, do all this, and then everything's going to be okay. So he brought over all these judges. Such a great idea. Moshe, you don't have to teach all Bnei Yisrael by yourself. You'll have other judges to help you out. Great idea. Except one thing. What happens when you got chosen and you didn't? All of a sudden, you start feeling jealous. Why'd that guy get chosen? All of a sudden, you hear a din, a halacha, straight out from him. And you sit there and you're like, wait a second, I don't think that's right. I want to go to Moshe Rabbeinu. And you say, no, I am the final authority over here. I was made a judge. I'm allowed to make this decision. You start hating the judge. Who are you to tell me that? You're a nobody. I want to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. All of a sudden, hatred, baseless hatred, and jealousy was brought into Bnei Yisrael. Satan was right there with Yisro. When Yisro said to himself, and this is how powerful the Satan is. When Yisro said to himself, I want to become a Jew. The Satan said to him, good idea. I want you to become a Jew. And this Satan himself pushed Yisro all the way to Bnei Yisrael to get him to become a Jew. So that this idea of Yisro would be able to be brought into Klal Yisrael, so that the Satan would bring into Bnei Yisrael jealousy and hatred. Very, very good. That's exactly why. That's exactly why. But you should know that's the whole idea. That what were we supposed to do in the desert? We should have learned straight up only from Moshe Rabbeinu. It should have been that we only learned Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu, that we didn't learn from anybody else. That we just sat there and Moshe Rabbeinu would be the only leader, the only teacher, the only judge, the only everything.
So
and there would have been nothing wrong.
Like, so
but what did was, very, very good. What Moshe Rabbeinu did was, he was an anav. He was a humble person. And he said, I'm willing to give up my spot if Bnei Yisrael says yes. Bnei Yisrael didn't realize how great Moshe Rabbeinu was just yet. They knew how big of a Navi he was, but not how great of a teacher he was. So they were willing to say to themselves, you know what? Okay, so we'll listen to Moshe Rabbeinu for a little bit, and then we'll listen to other people. We'll listen to those judges, and those judges, and those judges. They didn't realize that they were losing out on Moshe Rabbeinu. But Lassid Lavo, we're going to get Moshe Rabbeinu back. Every single one of us is going to be a student of Moshe Rabbeinu. The other people are going to be students of Mashiach. Who's the other people? The Goyim, the other nations of the world. We're not going to hear a single word of Torah from Mashiach. It's all going to be from Moshe Rabbeinu because we have to fix up what Yisrael messed up. We're going to have to fix it up. At the end of his life, he's going to have to chias amazim because he did have good intentions, but there's something really, really crazy about this. There's another thing that Yisrael stands for. I know we had this one, as in Taf Resh Vav, as in the 606 mitzvos as he became a Jew. There's another thing. What did Yisro cause? Later on, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Yisro, I want you to become the spy for us. I want you to go to Eretz Canaan, spy out the land, and tell us what the land is all about. Tell us what happens in Eretz Canaan. Yisro refuses. Moshe gets so upset, he sends Yisro away. That's Vayishlach Yisro. They sent him out at the very, very end of the parsha. Vayishlach Moshe Eschosno, he sent him away. Vayeich lo arso. Rashi says it means he went to go get Gerim. According to the other Perushim, it means that Yisro went, and he went totally away. He went off the derech again. Said, I'm off. I'm completely off. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu send him away? Because he refused to go spy out Eretz Yisrael. Because of that, what ended up happening? They had to send other spies. We know what the spies were. They ended up messing everything over. And because of that, we were stuck in the desert for 39 extra years. Yud Taru is a word that 10 people spied out the land only because Yisrael didn't do it instead. So we know that all these things only happen because Yisro messed up. There's a tremendous amount of Torah that just comes from that, but we're going to stop with that right now. There's a lot of little things that come from that as well, but okay. As we go on, we see these things, that Shnei Bonash, she had two children. Tzipora had two children that they brought with her Moshe Rabbeinu. It says this in Pasuk Gimel. Asher Shema Echod Gershom, one of the guy's names was Gershom, Ki Amar Gera Yisi Baratz Nachriya. I was a Ger in a land that was strange. The Shema Echod Eliezer. The name of the other kid was Eliezer. Shouldn't it be Shema Sheni? Let's go through that again. The first kid's name was Gershom. And then the first kid's name was Eliezer. What happened? I don't understand. What happened over here?
From two people.
Well, it's both from Tzipora and Moshe Rabbeinu. Tzipora and Moshe Rabbeinu. So what in the world could this be? Shema Echad and Shema Echad. So the way they answer it... That's a good call. There is an answer that says that Eliezer was the first one to get the bris because Gershom was given over. Listen to this pshat. You'll go crazy. Ki Omar Gera Yisi Baratz Nechuya. Because he said... I was a ger in a strange land. By Eliezer, it says, Shema Echad Eliezer, Ki Elokei Avi Bezri Vatzilini Mechar Paro, because God was with me, and he saved me from the sword of Paro. What happened to Ki Omar? Because he said. Shouldn't he have answered Ki Omar? It says Ki Omar by Gershom, but it doesn't say Ki Omar by Eliezer. Number two, wouldn't you think you'd thank God first before describing your situation in life? You're saying like, you know what I am? I'm strange. I'm lost in a land in the middle of nowhere. And then he comes along and he says, thank you God for everything you did to me, for saving me from the sword of Paro. Say the second one first. Thank God and then go along and say, oh, and you know where I am? I'm a ger. And what's the big deal of saying that you're a ger? Why does he have to tell people this? Here we go. This is an awesome answer. Says the Chidah. When Moshe first met Yisro, he was thrown into jail for 10 years. Famous story. Tzipora saved him. And afterward, whatever, Moshe Rabbeinu ended up living. Yisro thought he was completely dead. They brought him up. They realized, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu was alive. Okay, everything's all good. Moshe says, I want to marry your daughter. Your daughter's a tremendous tzaddikus. I want to marry your daughter. So Yisro says, fine, on one condition. The first child that's born is mine. And I'm going to use him for Avodah Zarah. Says Moshe Rabbeinu, I don't know if I have a choice. Do I have anything else? So he went to Tzipora and he said, this is what your father told me. Tzipora said, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. He said, okay, fine. He agreed to the deal, and he got married. The first kid was born. Tzipora grabbed the kid and said, this is my child. The woman names the first kid. The first kid should be named after the woman. First kid is named after the woman. Yisroel ran over to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ran over to Moshe Rabbeinu and said to Moshe Rabbeinu, what's wrong with you? You were supposed to give me the first kid. Why did your wife go and give him a bris milah? How could you allow Gershom to get a bris milah? This kid is mine. It's supposed to be an avodah zara child. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to him, listen, I'm a stranger in a strange land. I had no idea that these were your customs. I had no idea that this is your custom around here. I didn't know that the woman take the first child. That's not my fault. That's what Tzipporah did for me. I have no idea. So what happened was, Vishema Echad Eliezer. Shema Echad Gershom. The first kid was Gershom. Ki Amar. Why did they call him Gershom? Because Moshe said to Yisro, when Yisro asked, why aren't you giving him to me? Gary Zibarat Znachuria. I'm a stranger in a strange land. I didn't know the wife is supposed to take the first one. So I'm sorry, but that first child that I promised you is not mine to give away. Therefore, he couldn't give him away. That was number one. That's what I mean by Ki Amar. But by Eliezer, that was the first kid that went to Moshe Rabbeinu. That's Shema Echad, the first one that went to Moshe Rabbeinu, that Moshe Rabbeinu was allowed to name himself. That one he called Eliezer. Because that's for what he wanted. He wanted to thank God immediately. But he couldn't do that with Gershom. The whole pshat was that he was a ger. But by Eliezer, he said, now I thank God, because it's the first one that I'm allowed to say. That's the answer that they give. There's other answers that are given. Others say it's referring to Rabbi Elazar ben Horkanis. There's a famous Rav Noach Weinberg on that. There's a Shmuz give it over. Other people say other reasons that Rechavia, anybody know how many grandkids Moshe Rabbeinu had? 600,000. Quite a bit. Either way, do you know how many kids he had from Eliezer? Just one. Rechavia. Rechavia apparently was able to have 600,000 children. So that's a lot. I don't know if anybody's got... I have four. I'm catching up, but you know, it takes a while. You know, if I live for a little bit longer, then it might be 600,000. It's a goal. It's a goal. I've got a goal over here. Okay, that's out of the way. That's me, Malchus. Yud Tesh Dalet. I'm going to go a little Kabbalistic in all of you. I'm sorry about all this. So bear with me over here. Atemri Isa Mashiach Sisi L'Mitzrayim. You saw what I did to Mitzrayim. Va'as Va'esol Eschem Al Kanfei Nesharim. I lifted you guys up on wings of eagles. On wings of eagles. Va'avi Eschem Eloi. I brought you to me. What in the world does that mean? Wings of eagles. What was he able to do? What did he do to him? So what are these wings of eagles? What? Yeah, it's Hashem talking to Bnei Yisrael. I lifted you up on the wings of eagles. So the Pashup shot is, the shot that they usually give, is that it's the Anane HaKavod. I don't know if anybody knows it, you know, you realize, I think it was miracle number one of last week, but the Anane HaKavod were not just clouds. It was moving escalators. It was like one of those things that you go to the airport, you know, and like the lazy people just stand in that middle, and they just stand there, you know, and they just let the whole thing walk for you. It's like, you're walking just as fast as the guy on the side, you know? You're just like, I'm not moving my feet. As you're like walking around, you're like, you think I'm moving my feet? I'm not. I'm really not. I'm walking on a moving escalator. You know, it's like one of those things. But like everybody loves those moving escalators. They move everywhere, you know? Yeah, none of the cupboard was the exact same way. It moved them around. It would sit there and it'd be like, you know, when they would say like, oh, all aboard or whatever it was, it started the none of the cupboard and moving. And all of a sudden, none of the cupboard moved. They didn't move a thing. They were able to walk on Shabbos that way because they never moved. They never walked. They just traveled them. I'm sorry? Don got kicked out of the none of the cupboard because they were lazy. They sat there. How can you be lazy on a moving escalator? There's always that person who's really lazy on the moving escalator. I mean, you have one guy that's like standing, and you have that one guy who's like leaning on the side, like dragging himself behind. You know that guy who like keeps his leg against the glass thing so it makes that weird sound as you go by him? You know what I'm talking about? That guy? That's what Don was doing. Don was like dragging his foot. He's dragging his foot on the outside. You know, he's like holding his foot on the outside of that, and they go like, oh, it's going too fast for me. Oh, stomach. That's the type of thing. That's what Don was doing. Literally, I don't know, but that's the shot that we would say and Don. Either way, that's number one. That's one answer. There's another answer. Yonas ben Uziel says, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu never made it to Eretz Yisrael. Wrong. He did. When? In Mitzrayim. On the night when they were eating the Korban Pesach, Hashem gave each one of them an eagle to fly them into Eretz Yisrael. They would eat the Korban Pesach in Eretz Yisrael. Then they came right back to Mitzrayim. That was the Kanfei Nesharim. He gave them special eagles that were able to do that. Call it your very own little airplane. I don't know what it would be, but every single person who was able to eat the Korban Pesach got flown on Kanfei Nesharim all the way to go to Eretz Yisrael. We're not even in the Kabbalistic part yet. Here we go for the Kabbalistic part. Yeah, you don't have to like that one. That's out there. But that's Yonis Munizio. Targum Yonis Munizio. So, number three. Oh, geez. This is going to be a little bit more Hasidish then. The Kisei HaKavod. There's a throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The throne of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has four faces, facets on it. Four faces are an Adam, a person, an Aryeh, a lion, a Shor, an ox, and a nesher, an eagle. Those are the four faces. The four faces on the Kisei Kavod. We know that from different things that we've spoken about over the past couple weeks. Human ass, eagle, and what's it called? Adam Aryeh, lion. That's the one you're missing. So we've talked about it before, about all the different things that are on this throne and who saw it. Yaakov Avinu was able to see it. Yosef was able to see it. Yosef was almost on it. Yehuda might have been on it. Everything, we spoke about that before. The nesher's a weird one. So they all, each thing makes a little bit of sense. The Aryeh stands for Malchus, stands for kingdom. The lion is the king. The lion is the absolute king. The Shor stands for Midas Adin. Midas Adin means the absolute judgment of God. That's on the left side of the Kisei HaKavod. It's the absolute judgment of God. The Adam stands for Chesed, stands for the pure kindness of God, the kindness in making Adam and everything good about Adam. The last one is the Nesher. What's the Nesher all about? What's the eagle all about? So there's a lot of things you got to know about a Nesher. The first thing is the following. The Yalkut Reuveni tells us that the Nesher stands for Rachamim, the mixture between Chesed and Din, the way this world works. The Nesher is an animal that goes and kills other birds, but there's still always somebody on top of it. It can't just go ahead and make its own decisions. It's got to go ahead and listen to everything that Kadosh Baruch Hu says. There's an unbelievable medrash that every 10 years, the Nesher goes up to the sky, goes up to the sun, gets its feathers burned off, it comes back down to the ground, and regrows itself from the little bit that's left. Yeah, the famous phoenix, whole thing, the phoenix that, if anybody's read Harry Potter, I'm sure you got it from over there, but there's the phoenix idea of that, that applies by an eagle. What does that mean? It's that every single time, every single 10, it's called 10 years, whatever it is, the rachamim of Hashem, the mercy of God, gets put to the test. Where God just says, like, I want to beat the living crud out of these people already. You know, it just says, like, I can't believe these people are going all the... I can't believe they're still doing such bad things. It's put to the test. He has to recreate itself, so to speak. To rebuild itself, rebirth itself for everything that's around there. That's what he needs to do. That's the idea behind the Nesher. You should know that the Nesher was in Mitzrayim. That this eagle was there in Egypt the whole time. The Nesher flew up above B'nai Yisrael and protected them from anything that the Mitzrayim were really going to do bad to them. Yes, some people got killed, but the Nesher was there to protect them from all the things that are up above. And we also know something from Pirkei Avos. Have a kal kaneshet. You should be light like an eagle. You should be able to fly above everything and be able to have, when people say something to you, just fly away. Just fly away and not have to worry about things whatsoever. The Nesher may be the greatest Midah that God has on that Kisei HaKavod. I mean, there is Midas Adin, the absolute judgment. There is absolute Chesed. And there is Malchus, there is kingship. But the greatest of all those four is really the combination of everything put together, which is Rachamim, the mercy of God, where He knows He has to judge you, but He judges you with pure mercy. It's the combination of everything together. The Esau Eschem al Kanfei Nesharim. I lifted you up to the level of Nisharim. Esau, the letters Esau is Aleph, Sin, Aleph. Aleph stands for Adam. Sin stands for Shor. Aleph stands for Aryeh. The Adam, Shor, and Aryeh and the Kisei HaKavod lifted you up. They were brought up to the level of Nesher. To the level of where the Nesher, this eagle that was absolute rachamim, absolute mercy, in judgment in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the level that I brought you up to, and that's the level that you guys should be at. And then when you were there, you guys were so close to me, that's how I was able to give you the Torah. Okay, that's a little bit of that. Okay, we're not going to go into that. Anybody know why Har Sinai was called Har Sinai? Some people say Har Sinai is called Har Sinai because of the Sneh. The original Sneh, the burning bush that Moshe Rabbeinu saw. Has anybody ever seen a rock from Har Sinai?
I have one. I have two.
You have them?
Yeah.
Awesome. Rav Yaakov Emden quotes it down that he's seen it before, and you can buy them supposedly. The rocks of Har Sinai all have a picture of a sneh on them. They have a picture of a little burning bush on that rock. They say that if you split the rock in half and you look at it on the inside, there's a picture of a sneh on each one. On each one of the rocks that you have. It's like that. You'll see it on each side. If you split it again, you'll see an entire sneh on each side. You split it again, the Yavetz tried it 8 times. Rav Yaakov Emden tried it 8 times, and he was able to see it on every single one. Because supposedly that's a sign from God that the rocks of Har Sinai are not like anything else. That's what they call it. They call it the sneh just for that. sign of a sneh. Why a sneh over anything else? A sneh is a burning, was the burning bush, but it was a thorn bush. Because the only place where God would rest his Shekhinah is a place where no one else has ever stood. Nobody goes to places where there's tons of thorns. Because there was tons of thorns up on top of that mountain, he made sure that's what the sneh was. It was a thorn bush. He made sure that nobody else was up on top of that mountain, then everything was all good. And by the way, there's something to that as well. What are we known as? On Purim and Chanukah. Purim and Chanukah, we're known as Shoshanim. Shoshanas Yaakov, we sing after the Megillah. And what's the wording on Chanukah? Uminos are kankanin, nasa nes la shoshanim. It made a nes for shoshanim. What are shoshanim? Shoshanim are roses. What are roses? Beautiful petals on top. Beautiful petals. They look beautiful. The best thing in the world that you can possibly imagine, the number one thing to get for your wife on her anniversary, on her wedding, on everything, is a rose. You get like a little daisy, and it's nice. But you know, I was like bent over a little bit, and it's like, you know, you want it. A rose looks beautiful. The problem with a rose is that they got thorns all over them. They got thorns all over them. So you hold it, and you're just like, ah! You cut yourself all over. Then you need band-aids all over. Then you cover yourself completely. You cover yourself with like little hands. You give it over to your wife. She cuts herself all over. Not a good deal. Not a good deal. So you got to clip them. You got to make sure the thorns are off and everything. Why do roses have thorns? The pshat is B'nai Yisrael stand for roses. When we're good, we are good. We're rose petals. We look beautiful. We're unbelievable all the way up on top. We're gorgeous, gorgeous things that just bloom. Unbelievable things happen to us. But when we do bad, we're thorns. The rose petals all fall off, and we become just a bunch of thorns. Just a bunch of thorns. And Kadosh Baruch will still save us. Eventually, those rose petals will come back. But it goes into thorns. There's a lot behind those thorns over here. We're going to end off with one little thing. Lo Sachmod. The last one of the Aseres Adibros is Lo Sachmod. Can't have any jealousy. How in the world can someone tell me not to be jealous? How can you tell me not to be jealous? I'm jealous right now. Jealous right now. You look at somebody. What's? How can you make such a command? Don't bow down to idols. I got that. I can do that. Keep Shabbos. I can do that. Honor your parents. I can do that. Don't murder. Don't steal. Don't commit adultery. Don't testify falsely. I'm good. I'm really good. You know, all those things. Don't say Hashem's name in vain. I'm even good with that. I mess up sometimes because, you know, you think about it, you say Hashem's name without thinking it. Okay, that happens. But Lo Sachmo, don't be jealous. It's a thought. It's an automatic thing. I sit there and it automatically happens. I become jealous of somebody. Somebody sits there and tells me, yeah, I have to buy another $200,000 car again. Sigh, life is so hard. You get jealous. You're like, come on. I'm going with an 87 Chevy. Like, why? How in the world does that work? Of course you're going to be jealous. The idea is, the Ibn Ezra quotes this down and he says, there's no such thing as a villager being jealous of the king. Just doesn't happen. Because the villager doesn't fathom, he can't even imagine being the king. Nothing enters his brain to even imagine being the king. And if he is really jealous of the king, he's an idiot. Because it's something that's unattainable. Something stupid. You want to be jealous of that business guy? Be jealous of the business guy, because you could be a business guy. You want to be jealous of that guy that has a better field? Be jealous of that guy, because that's something attainable. But you want to be jealous of the king? Why? What is there to be jealous about? He was born into that situation. You weren't. It's something that's so far beyond us. But what in the world is there to be? The idea is that if you really knew your place in life, and if you're really happy with yourself, if you really understood where you were, you'd never be jealous of anybody. You knew who you were. There's nothing to be jealous of. If I understand this is what I'm supposed to do, I don't look at somebody else and say, then why does he have a better car than me? Because I know this is where I am. This is who I am. I'm happy with who I am. I just got to keep working on myself. And as you keep working on yourself, you might get a little bit better. But it doesn't mean that I have to be like that guy. It doesn't mean I have to be like that guy. It's all gaiva. It's all pride that's making you feel that way. Once you knock down that pride, then you can get over yourself. Then you won't be jealous of anybody. So the idea is to sit there and say to yourself, I don't need anything else. Or to say to yourself, what's my ego telling me? Why do I need to give in to my ego like that? When I knock down my ego, then I'm going to be able to do things. And that's what God is telling you. Not to not be jealous. Telling you, don't think that there's anything to be jealous of. Why should you bother being jealous of that guy? That's the idea behind it. That's how the Ibn Ezra puts it. Same way that I'm not really jealous of Bill Gates. I can't fathom what it's like to be Bill Gates. I have no idea what it would be like to have $41 billion in my back pocket. And I know, he doesn't have a back pocket. It's all the fact is, to be able to buy anything I want at any time, and to be able to say, like, I just don't care, to be able to go up to a restaurant and just be like, I just bought you. You know, just to be able to do that, I can't even fathom it. It doesn't even faze me to look at a guy who has that. When I saw Lance Briggs with that $350,000 Lamborghini that he just crashed into the side and was like, "All right, I'm out. I don't want it anymore." It doesn't even faze me because I sit there and I'm just like, I don't say to myself, "Man, I wish I had that Lamborghini." I'm like, "The heck is wrong with that guy?" And I hope everybody else had that feeling as well. When you first saw that, you're just like, "Oh man, I want that Lamborghini." It's not what you were thinking. What you're thinking is, "That guy's nuts. What's wrong with him? What in the world happened to him?" For you to think to yourself, I'm so far beyond, there's no way I'm going to be able to want or desire a $350,000 Lamborghini. It's so far beyond what I would want in this world or what I would want in this life. It's like, it's nothing to think about. It's nothing to even consider. That gets you over this whole midah of Lo Sachmod. And it's the last one. It's the one thing, the one part of the Torah that has to do with your character traits. One thing that makes you work on your character traits. Not too many times will we make you work on your character traits. This is one time where we will. We'll tell you, and it's one of the Aseret Dibros. Good time. In the 10th one, the 10th commandment altogether. But it's telling you, work on it. Work on it. You won't be okay. You won't be sorry for doing so. So just very quickly, we did a bunch of things with Yisro, all the things between Kriyas Yamsuf and Amalek and everything like that. We went to the whole Vayichad. The Yisro was very upset because he was 10th generation. We went to Yud Taru and Yud plus Tafer Shvav and the 606 mitzvos. There were a couple other things we did with Shema Echad Eliezer, why Eliezer was really the first kid, even though he was the second kid, why he was called the first kid. We did a whole thing about the Kanfei Nisharim, of how it worked within the Kisei HaKavod, with the throne of God. And the last thing we do is Lo Sachmod, how we understand not being jealous of other people, as well as Har Sinai within the whole Shnat thing. Alright guys, we're going to stop with that. Have a great Shabbos. We'll speak.